You're listening to Red Nation Online.
You're listening to the North of 49 Soccer Podcast. Interviews, analysis, and discussion about Canadian soccer with hosts Chris Williams and Steve Watcher. All right, and we're back here with Chris Williams and the North 49 podcast. Chris, how are you doing? Are you still basking in the glow of that big Canadian win over the United States on Saturday?
Well, I'm basking in the glow of that win and trying to catch my breath with all the MLS games and obviously the Olympic qualifying tournament. So I'm trying to catch my breath, and obviously Canada's big win against Brazil on the women's side. So I'm trying to catch my breath, and my fitness isn't up to par, but I'm getting there. So thanks for having me back on again.
Yeah, it makes for a busy weekend with everything happening in Canada. I can honestly say that I didn't watch any EPL, Bundesliga, or La Liga games. So it's a good thing. Lots of good things happening. Last week we started off, I asked if you'd pick my lottery numbers. Now I'm just going to suggest that maybe you should start your own business as a psychic.
Well, we've got to set up a hotline for Red Nation, so maybe that's a thought for the future.
Yeah, you know, we didn't put on the record officially on the podcast, but you did call me before that Canada-US game, and I have to say you were the only person that I spoke to, and you know, and even taking into account what people were writing online and in the media, who actually predicted that victory. So you know, how big was that victory, and how did you get it right when so many other people were probably a little bit scared off by Canada's performance in the El Salvador game?
Well, I think I'll be honest here. I you know, after their match against El Salvador, I was a little skeptical about Tony Fonseca's team there down in Nashville. I just thought that they lacked a little something. They lacked a little bite, a little bit of fire. Over a decade ago, I was a part of the U-20 national team, and Paul James was the coach of that team, and we went to play the U.S. in Rhode Island, and I was thinking, you know, they need some type of, I don't know, inspiration, some fire, as I said earlier. So leading up to that game, and I know I called you before the match ended, I could just see it. I think there was a clip there, and I saw Tony Fonseca say, fight, fight, fight. And I could just smell it. I don't know if it's a sixth sense that I have, being a former player, but I could just see that they wanted it. I think Canada gets up for those types of matches. I know, being a former player, always wanting to beat the U.S., and I think, obviously, they're south of the border, and we're a little bit behind them in terms of our development and funds and funding for the sport of soccer. So I think that Tony Fonseca should be given a definite pat on the back and job well done, and then the players as well. I think it was a huge victory. I know that the U.S. going into the game probably thought Canada would be second rate to them, but that's the typical U.S. mentality, and fair enough to them. Kudos to them. They've earned that. They've put the bright pieces in place for their sport to grow, and I think they should have that attitude. But it was great to see our Canadians, you know, go out there and not be intimidated and rise to the occasion and get the final victory.
Yeah, I think what impressed me the most, and certainly there were a number of different things which could impress you, both from, you know, individual players and you know, the way that the team performed as a unit, was just the confidence with which the Canadian players played. And you know, watching that game and just looking at the faces of the American players, you could see towards the end there that they were a little bit in shock. And I think you know, you don't usually think of the standings as the game is going on, but I think they were aware that you know, losing that game was going to be a big problem for them.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, again, I mentioned about them being overconfident. The U.S. Tony Fonseca got the tactics right in his 4-3-2-1 formation. And you know what? You can play whatever tactics you want. You can set up a team. If you don't have the right players in place on the field, you know, being first to the ball, winning challenges in the air, second balls, then you're never going to come. You're never going to win the game. You're always going to come second best. So I think all the right pieces were in place. And you alluded to their faces of the U.S. I have to chuckle, because watching the game, I was, you know, pounding the counter there, just saying, you know, yeah, I'm thankful that they're winning the game, and I'm also happy that, you know, just that we had a little bit of arrogance. The second goal scorer, what's the striker's name there, Lucas Cavallini, could just see his face. I could just see his face, and he would just, you know, have that little bit of arrogance and that confidence, because he knew it. He knew that the second goal, you know, sunk the U.S. where they needed to be, sunk into the ground there with that goal. So, the U.S. came second in that match, and hopefully Canada can go on to their third match and win the group and go on to qualifying after the semifinal round. So,
yeah, I should state for the record right now that, we're recording this podcast just before, a little bit before the Canada-Cuba match is going to kick off. So we'll have to wait until the next podcast to break down that game, and hopefully we'll be celebrating the fact that Canada's moved onto the next round, and I'm pretty confident that that's going to happen. It looks like they need either a draw or a win to move on now, but based on the way things have shaken out with the four teams in their group. But to a man in that game, just every player played fantastic, so it's hard to single out a few, but I'd like to do that and just get your thoughts and maybe chat a little bit about some of the players who were very impressive in that game. And over the two games, probably the most impressive player has been Mikhail Misiewicz, the keeper, who's just been fantastic. He basically got the draw in the first game and matched that performance in the second. He's young and he might still be a little bit green, but has he done enough here to have earned at least a call up at some point to the senior national team?
That's an interesting question. Misiewicz is a young keeper. I think he's earned his stripes there playing for Canada. Well done to the lad. I think, with performances like that, he should be a definite one to watch. And Stephen Hart being on the bench, he has a close eye on him. So if Stephen Hart feels that he should be there, then I know he'll get a call up. I don't know if he's the man for the job to get a senior call-up right now at this stage, but he's one to watch, and I think Canada should groom him and continue to develop him and continue to make him feel a part of Canada, because, again, it's what a talent he is and what a performance. And you can see, he has that, again, that arrogance, that confidence, that bite, that Canadians, we haven't always had that, but we need that. We need players like that to step up. So I don't know if he deserves a call-up, but maybe for a camp coming up, why not? Why not bring him in as a second goalkeeper and give him some more much-needed experience, because his performance has been top class.
And, speaking of players who've played with a little bit of bite, and there were a number, Nana Adekora, I think, has played very well, and I think throughout the years, we've never thought of Nana quite so much as a leader, just because he's always been a younger player on TFC who, has looked up to Dwayne and some of the other more senior Canadian players and other players on TFC. But, this team needed a leader, someone with experience and years on them. And I think he's the oldest player on the team. And, he's stepped up and he's delivered. He's captained that team very well. It's an interesting situation for him. We both know that he's without a team right now. He's kind of in a bit of limbo with San Jose holding his rights. And he certainly had a tough year last year with the way things went down with TFC and with Dwayne being traded. I know they're very close and whatnot, and it looks like this tournament could be something that could be a real boost for him and could be exactly what he needs at this point in his career. I mean, what do you make of how he played, and is this a good omen for his career?
Again, yeah, Nana's an interesting story. TFC could probably use him at the back right now, but we'll get to that in a moment. Nana, in the first match, he didn't look sharp, and obviously he didn't look sharp because he's without a club, he hasn't been playing, and for the fans out there, and I'm a fan as well, you sort of question, he's a professional soccer player, how come he doesn't look so good, how come he doesn't look so sharp? It's because when you're finding a club, or you're trying to find a club, and you're just struggling to find fitness, and it's a huge part of the game, and when you're not match fit, like the U.S. players were, or like El Salvador players were probably, he didn't look sharp, but it's like he flipped the switch. I don't know what Tony Fonseca, I don't know if it was the, playing the U.S. and he had something to prove, but definitely leader out there, and he was Canada's captain, and led by example. So fair play to Nana, well done. And I think, this will only do good for his confidence. I hope that whatever club he finds himself on, they see that quality in him, because he has something there. He just needs to play. I think it's just match fitness. And the more games Nana plays as a professional in the tough environment that he'll find himself in, maybe he'll be with a club that's in relegation in a country like Germany in the second Bundesliga, or even the Regionalliga, or in Switzerland, environments that you know, that has that pedigree. We'll give him that pedigree, that experience, and, you know, down the road, he could be, you know, a pillar for Canada's national team. So it was a good performance, a great performance by Nana in that match versus the U.S.
Yeah, in terms of a pillar, you can just see the athleticism there, and, you know, just needs to keep playing and keep developing. You know, he's been around for a while, you know, through the whole history of TFC that we probably think he's older than he is, but he's still a young player, and, you know, that's why he's on this team. You know, another center back who TFC could probably use and who they actually have under contract is Donnell Henry. He only played in the one match against the USA, but what a performance that was. He scored the winning goal and was a rocket center back. You know, I don't know if Aaron Vinter watched that match live or if he's going to see it on tape, but, you know, has he, you know, sort of at the same time as being playing for Canada, being auditioning to maybe play a role to help TFC with some of their defensive problems there?
Again, Donnell Henry, again, TFC should look to him pretty soon coming up with their upcoming matches. Donnell Henry, I think you couldn't have a better start to his Canadian national team career in terms of playing with the Olympic team there. I mean, scoring that goal, what a goal it was. And you mentioned something, the athleticism that Nana and Donnell Henry. In modern-day football, you have to have that athleticism. You also have to have the technical side of things. And if those two can get things right, they will be Canada's next center backs. And you have to have that athleticism. And Donnell Henry showed that in that goal that he scored. I mean, just the athleticism to get up there and lose his mark. I was watching that his goal, the highlight, a few times. And, you know, to lose his mark, to have that savvy just leading up to that corner kick, he showed it. So Donnell Henry is a young player. I think Aaron Vinter has to be careful, though. He has to groom him. He has to be under the tutelage of someone at TFC who can, you know, coach him along. Torsten Frings is there, but what a great start to his career, and it should only give him more confidence as his soccer career goes on.
Another interesting player who did quite well in that game was Andres Frizenga, who played at right back and who is actually, you know, a rarity since you retired for Canada as you know, a legit right back who actually plays that position week in, week out. You know, similar to the way Donnell Henry did in the Champions League last year, Frizenga did a great job of shutting down Breck Shea. I can tell you he's probably an American who probably doesn't like playing against Canada or Canadian teams much these days. You know, you're a former right back. You know, what do you make of him, and could he evolve into the solution at right back that we've talked about before?
Yeah, I won't be coming out of retirement anytime soon. But Frizenga, he played well. I thought he would have a tough time against Breck Shea because I think Breck Shea is quite a player. And, you know, he shows it game in, game out with Dallas in the MLS. So I thought he was going to have his hands full, but he handled them quite well. I think Breck Shea was a little bit rattled, and I know this is a big tournament for Breck Shea. I think he's trained with Arsenal in the offseason and looks to go overseas. So fair play to Frizenga at right back. And again, modern-day football, you have to be able to run. You have to be able to defend. And I think he had his, you know, defending right with Breck Shea. You know, Breck Shea was trying to run him down the line, and he couldn't get him beat, and he couldn't find a way. Even when he got through, there was backup with Donnell Henry or Nana Adekora. So I think Frizenga did well, and I don't know if he's Canada's, you know, solution at right back, but he's definitely a player they should watch for. And again, you have to continue to groom these players. You know, they've just come off a big win, and I think the Canadian Soccer Association should look at these players and say, how best can we develop these players? How best can we make sure that these players feel wanted and that we need them? And again, Frizenga, job well done, because Breck Shea is one of the U.S.'s top players. So job well done again.
Another player who came up really big in that game, and, you know, I think was maybe even a little bit unheralded, was Philippe Davies, you know, your former teammate with the Vancouver Whitecaps. He had two assists, and, you know, the whole midfield was solid there, but, you know, a very strong game from him. Like Nana, he's without a team. You know, in terms of continuing to develop these players, for a player like Davies, what would be a good environment for him once this tournament is over? You know, does he, you know, try and get on with an MLS team, an NASL team, or is he better off trying to make a move to Europe?
Yeah, I think as long as Phil's playing, he's a very technical player, Philippe Davies. He needs to find an environment where he can play game in, game out. I think if he looks to the MLS, he'll find it. The athleticism, the physicality of the league, is a bit much for him. But you know what? If he's in the right system, he can play. I believe that if he finds himself in Europe, he can play game in, game out, because he has the technical qualities to be quite a creative player there, because he has some type of creativity that not too many Canadians have growing up, and he has that natural ability with the ball and set pieces. You can see he's deadly on set pieces. I think he was he had 2 assists in the U.S. game. So Philippe Davies, if he finds himself with a European club, even in Germany where football is a little bit more physical than the other countries, then I think he could be, you know, look to get a call up from the senior team. You know, we have players in his position, obviously, but, you know, down the road, Phil Davies, you know, he understands that he's not the fastest player, and that's not a knock against him, but if you understand your limitations and you use your strengths and the ability on the ball that Phil Davies has, then I think he can see himself playing for Canada in the future. So, again, Philippe Davies, what a player. I remember Phil playing on the Whitecaps, and hard worker, but great on the ball. So it's good to see Canada developing those types of players.
Yeah, Davies lined up in the midfield against the U.S. with Kyle Becker and Samuel Piette, and you know, again, both of them did really well, both, you know, supporting the offense and also you know, keeping the defensive shape and really supporting the team defense. And an interesting duo there in the sense that one went the U.S. college route, and the other is a very young man who's you know, playing his trade in Europe in France. You know, what do you think about the fact that, you know, you've got two players that both did exceptionally well, and, you know, they're both taking very different routes to, you know, their international success?
Yeah, it's a great question, especially for Canadians growing up playing the sport. You know, right now we're seeing a lot of players asking, you know, should I go play professionally in Europe, or should I go to the U.S. and go to college and get my education? I think you have to understand, you know, where you're at in terms of a player. I think also you have to understand, going to Europe, it isn't a cakewalk. You're Canadian, first off. When you arrive at the front steps of a club, you're Canadian. That's a knock against you. You're a nice kid. You're a nice soccer player. You're a nice person. But to go to Europe, you have to be prepared. You have to have thick skin. It's a business over there, and they're not going to develop you if they don't see something in you. So you have to be prepared for that. In the college system, I think, you know, you're going to be on full scholarship, or you're going to have some type of scholarship to help you receive an education. And I think that's a big part, because there's an afterlife after you play soccer. And, I mean, I think both players use their environment and where they come from, their path. So you can see it when they had great chemistry with Philippe Davies there in the midfield, and they both make it work. So Samuel Piette, young player there. I'm not too sure his age, Steve. I think he's only, what, 17?
Yeah, he's only 17. Him and Bryce Alderson are the two youngest. I'm not quite sure which one was born first, but yeah.
There you go. And Kyle Becker, I keep hearing great things about Kyle Becker. I think he goes to Boston College. And, I think he'll be one to watch coming out of the MLS draft, or if not, he'll be going off to Europe, because I believe he has some quality that can take him there. So it's an interesting question. I think we'll touch on that in podcasts in the future. But those two players, I mean, I can't say enough again about Canada's team. I'm just excited and happy that we beat the U.S. What a great feeling.
Yeah, in addition to the player, you know, Fonseca made 7 changes to his lineup, I believe. So, you know, a lot of players got their first chance in the tournament. And Sean, one player who I was impressed with for the way that he bounced back was Evan James of the Montreal Impact. You know, he had kind of had a rough game in the first match against El Salvador with a lot of turnovers and, you know, not really generating much on offense. But, you know, he had came on to replace an injured player against the U.S. very early on. And, you know, I thought he was exceptional and just melded in with the rest of the team very well. You know, how do you think Evan James played?
Yeah, it's night and day again with these players. It's a key ingredient, confidence. And Tony Fonseca and Steven Hart there, they must be great motivators, because Evan James, he looked disappointing in the first match. And then, you know, as I can remember, him having some runs at the U.S. defense, he was, you know, running at them, putting them under pressure, you know, had some shots from outside the 18 there. And you could see his confidence growing as the game went on. So night and day, again, his performance. And, I mean, he has some qualities to him. I think that he needs to improve. I think he needs to get some games in the MLS, as he's with Montreal, I believe. So that will definitely come, and I look forward to him, you know, contributing to Canada's Olympic run here.
And, you know, last player I wanted to get your thoughts on was, you already mentioned him, by the scorer of the second goal, Lucas Cavallini. You know, what a breath of fresh air, just in terms of, you know, his attitude, and, you know, his style is a little bit different from what we're used to. It seemed like he gave the U.S. all kinds of trouble with his physical presence. Again, another young player who's probably got some developing to do, but he looks like another one for the future.
Yeah, you know what? When you mentioned Lucas there, I think him and Randy Edwini Bonsu, I think they had a good understanding during the game. And those two players, again, confidence is a big thing. And when he scores that goal and I look at his face, I just think, you know what? He has that. He has that little bit of, you know, that thick skin, that confidence, that little bit of savvy to cause problems, and that arrogance. It's really his arrogance. And I'm glad that these Canadian soccer players, young soccer players, have that, because they can compete. And once you can compete on that level in terms of your physical play and technical play, then there's nothing that says you can't go on and win a match, a big match like that. And I think there's much more from him, you know, down the road. I think that he'll definitely be on the radar of Stephen Hart and Tony Fonseca down the road. So, well done to all the lads, and I'm just happy to be a Canadian. So, congrats to the under-23s, and good luck in their upcoming match.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to watch the rest of the tournament, also just to watch those players develop for years to come. Another young player on that team who did very well in that game is our guest on the podcast this week. We pre-record an interview with him, and you know him quite well, so why don't you set up the interview?
Yes, this interview is with Russell Tabor, Canada's under-17 player of the year in 2008-2009, my former Whitecaps teammate in 2010, and here we go. This is Russell Tabor on North of 49 podcast.
Russell, you're currently with the Canadian men's U23 Olympic qualifying team in Nashville. You've played with many of the players on the squad previously, but this particular team did not have a lot of time to prepare for the qualifying tournament. In your mind, how well has the team come together?
When we came into this, we understood that we only had a limited time together, and we had a 10-day camp before this, and with the time that we've had, we've done extremely well with it. The teams come together quite nicely, and I think that showed in parts of the first game we played.
Russell, given that the group stage of the Olympic qualifying tournament is a grueling run of 3 matches in 6 days, how are you and the other players managing that type of physically imposing schedule?
Yeah, last night was a very tough game, and I know the guys and myself were feeling it today, so we had a very light recovery session, and we just went in the pool a little bit today, and everybody's doing absolutely everything we can, from eating, drinking right, to make sure we're ready for the next game.
Russell, you've recently been playing some left back for both the Whitecaps and the U23s. How are you adjusting to the position, and how have the two coaching staffs been helping you in terms of making that adjustment?
Both teams have been fantastic with coaching me and helping me along with this position, and I don't think that left back is my best position, but I'm happy to play there, and I'm happy to do what the coach and the squad need me to do. So it's just another tool that I'm happy to learn.
Russell, we're going to speak about the Whitecaps specifically. You know, they're off to a solid start this season. How do you like the current makeup of the Whitecaps team?
You can see it from the games we played so far. The team is fantastic. We have a bunch of new players that are contributing a lot to our team, and the results are showing that.
And Russell, obviously one of the biggest changes, a number of players came into the team over the offseason, but I'd say probably the biggest change has to be at the head coaching position with Martin Rennie taking over. What exactly has he brought to the club, and how do you enjoy playing for him particularly?
Martin Rennie has brought this attitude to a team where winning is expected, and we as a team now, being from one of the bottom teams last season, are expecting to be one of the top teams. And what he also brings is being humble. So with each game, it's always a new day, and it's not like we're going to be with like overconfident or anything like that. We're just going to remain humble and keep working hard each day.
Russell, you've played under Taylor Thorsen and now Martin Rennie. This is your second year in the MLS. You had some injuries last season, but you also played very well in the 11 matches that you featured in. How much confidence do you have, and how much have you gained from
last season into this season?
Yeah, the first season was a very good season for me. The first game against TFC was it's a great memory for me to have, and continuing throughout that season, it was just a major learning experience for me. The adversity with the injuries, and you know, having a lot of ups and downs. It was a great season, but I mean, I'm just looking to improve this season, be a little bit more consistent with my play, and look at the games.
Russell, you're kind of the poster boy for the Whitecaps residency program, but at the same time, you are an Ontario native, having grown up in Niagara Falls. Who or what were the biggest influences in soccer for you growing up in Ontario?
My father was my greatest influence and still is to this day. He taught me everything I knew as a kid of how to be a young man, how to be a young athlete, and to always, you know, live each day and live in the moment. So he was the greatest influence for me growing up, and also the man who moved me out to Vancouver and had a tremendous influence in my life was Patrick Tobel. He was my provincial coach for, I think, three, four years, and I always had great experiences with him wherever we were and whatever team we were playing against. So he was a major influence for me going to Vancouver. He was actually the one that had brought me out there.
Russell, obviously growing up in Canada, there are some challenges that players face. And with the limited options in Canada, what appeal did the Whitecaps residency program have, and what sacrifices did you have to make in order to pursue your dream of playing professional soccer?
Well, I moved away from home when I was 15 years old, and it obviously took its toll on my mom and my dad. But my dad was more the one pushing me along, saying, this is what you have to do if you want to be a professional. And being a professional was my dream, and I just had to do it. So it did take its toll on me as well, being away from home at a young age. The first couple months, I didn't know whether I was actually going to make it, and I thought, you know, these players are very good and I'm not up to their level. But within the next month or so, I ended up starting on the team, and Thomas Niendorf, another great influence in my soccer career, just kept pushing me along, and he told me I had the tools to do it. It's just about getting that confidence and being confident in myself. And, you know, he helped me along the way in Vancouver. And you know, the residency program offered everything that I needed as a young kid trying to become professional. With the programs they set up, help us, like, kind of learn how to live on our own. And we'd go to school, so we'd be keeping up with our academics, and then we'd have to train in the afternoon. So it was a very good program and it still is today for any young kid in Canada that's trying to pursue a career in professional soccer.
Russell, a lot of young players ignore the fitness component of the game. You know, we've all heard that you're quite focused on that, but how much emphasis do you really put on endurance and physical fitness in order to maintain your standard of play? And you know, let's talk a little bit about your training regimen.
Chris Williams can tell you how important fitness is. When we were at Vancouver together, he was always the one that was pushing me, and he was one of the older guys, and I never wanted him to beat me, but even for him, fitness was crucial, and it is for me as well. Always doing those little extra things that maintain your body and just keep yourself feeling good. But, you know, I've been somewhat naturally fit throughout my entire life. I did cross country when I was younger, so it's kind of been installed within me to have a good fitness level. But, you know, even in spite of that, there's also the side where you don't want to do too much because that causes injuries and whatnot. So there's also that maintenance part of it where you need to roll out, you need to get on the softball, you need to, you know, just keep your body prepared and ready for the next game.
So you just mentioned some of the components that you have to do as a young player. Obviously, you've received the Canadian Player of the Year accolade and the achievement of being a young professional. What's the message you'd like to pass on to other young Canadian players who aspire to follow in your footsteps, and how much of the work needs to be put in during your own time combined with team training?
There's a lot you need to do on your own, and there's a lot to becoming a professional soccer player. It's not an easy path, but I can tell young players that, you know, there's nothing better than there's nothing like it. It's the best time of your life, and the main thing is to never stop believing in yourself and to play with confidence.
That was Russell Tiebert of the Vancouver Whitecaps and the Canadian Men's U23 Olympic qualifying team. And, you know, Russell's away from the Vancouver Whitecaps right now, but Chris, they seem to be doing pretty well to start the season. They're undefeated, first in the Western Conference, second overall in the MLS. You know, what do you think of Vancouver's start to the season so far? It's still early.
It is still early, and I still peg them to make the playoffs this year. You know, last year I think they would have lost that game. They would have given up a late goal, and I have this vision in my head of Jay DeMeritt blocking Dwayne De Rosario, you know, shot in the 18, and I think they would have lost a game like that last year. But I think it's a team effort. When you have your forwards and your attacking midfield players like Davide Chimiento defending, I know we've mentioned it on past podcasts, but when you have players like that defending, I think, you know, that they're in good shape to get some results or at least get some points, whether it might not be a win, but it's a draw and it's a point, a much-needed point, especially for the Whitecaps. So I think they've done well. I don't know if, you know, Martin Rennie would be disappointed. I felt there were some gaps as the game went on in midfield. I do feel they missed Gershon Kofi in the midfield. I think he adds some much-needed bite, although they have the players, I guess, to replace him with. So Martin Rennie, I don't think he'll be extremely happy just because, as I said, as the game went on, there were some gaps. But I think that's what happens when you play a club like DC and you have the reigning MVP, you know, Dwayne De Rosario causing you some stress there. So it was an open game, a flowing game, and I quite enjoyed it when I was watching. So, but the Whitecaps, yeah, they'll be happy with the start of their season, and they'll look for some more wins, you know, their upcoming matches on the road.
All the talk heading into this season was about, you know, how they had the potential to be a real offensive juggernaut, and you know how they had so much depth at the striker position and so many offensively oriented players. You know, they've played, you know, three teams that you wouldn't think have the strongest defenses in the league, and they've only got three goals so far, and you know Eric Hassley has yet to put one away. Is that a concern for the Whitecaps, or is it just you know, still too early to make any judgment on the offense, or and you know, just considering the fact that maybe players are still getting going?
Yeah, I think it's too early to make a judgment call on that, just because I remember when Taylor Thordarson and Tommy Sohn, when that switch happened, and Tommy Sohn implemented, you know, it's almost like we're going to attack with our forwards and we're going to leave the defense to defend at the back, and that didn't work. So I think you have to find the right balance, and I think Martin Rennie has. I wouldn't be too worried. I mean, again, you have players like Eric Hassley who can score at will if he needs to. It just, I think, finding his form, and also the players, you know, it is relatively a new team. You have a new, you know, tactics in place, new system, new mentality. So I think it's finding that right balance, and I think Vancouver will. I mean, whenever they go forward, I always think, you know, you know, the other team's in trouble, you know, because, you know, they have those attacking players like Camilo and Chimiento and Latu and Hassley, and they're runners. They love to run at players. So, and, you know, you can even see their fullbacks getting forward. So I don't think they should be too concerned, you know, with their upcoming matches and for the rest of the season. They'll might be one of the leading teams with goals, you know, goals for. So there shouldn't be any worry for that club.
Yeah, I think it's only a matter of time before the goals come. There's just too much quality and too much depth and you know, proven goal scorers there. You know, I think it's a real advantage if you look at it, if you look at the three games. You know, they haven't played particularly well. They haven't played poorly by any stretch, but you know, I think they're 3-0, and they really haven't, you know, hit their full steam yet. So last year you would have looked at a lot of games where they played well and they lost or drew. And, you know, this year it seems like the results are coming, even when the team's not functioning at, you know, 100% yet.
Yeah, again, it's that balance, right? And I think Martin Rennie would be pleased. You know, obviously there's a bit of anxiety, nervousness going on. You don't know if what you're trying to implement will work, but the club should feel quite confident going forward into the season because they've had clean sheets. And, you know, Jay DeMeritt, their captain, is at full strength. He's healthy, and the other players as well. Alan Rochat went down with an injury. Hopefully that's not, you know, long-term. But, no, I think the Whitecaps are in good shape to have a successful season, and let's hope that, you know, they do.
So moving on to Toronto FC, you know, Saturday night, that Canadian U23 win over the U.S. was a very nice surprise for many soccer fans in Toronto due to the fact that, you know, they had to endure TFC really struggling in their home opener on Saturday afternoon, losing 3-0 to San Jose. Many people had hoped that the team would not struggle significantly without Torsten Frings, but it's clear that they did. Chris, what did you make of TFC's performance?
Yes, Steve, I was at the game, and just like I mentioned with Canada's Olympic team, I could smell the victory. I could see it happening for the Olympic side there. I was at the game, and just the start of the match, I was just thinking, you know what? TFC, they're in trouble here. And I know Torsten Frings is out injured, but there's a certain mentality, there's a certain, I guess, respect when you come out to your home opener and you have the fans there, and there's just a certain edge that you have. And TFC, they didn't have it. And I believe that, you know, I can speak about tactics. I'm not a coach, so I will not do that. But I'll just say from a standpoint of, you know, having that edge, that willingness to win, willingness to fight, I know that they didn't have that. You know, the first goal was disappointing that they gave up. You know, I'm not too sure whose fault that was, you know, at the back, but players didn't, you know, mark up. And people will place blame on TFC's captain, Julian de Guzman. And I think he doesn't have any problem with being held accountable. But I don't think he's at fault for all the goals. I don't think he's at fault for everything bad in the game. There were some positives in that performance. I know we're going to mention that in a second here. But I just think that TFC, the players, lacked that bite. You know, you saw it at the Galaxy game when they played David Beckham and crew. And they had that. They had that bite, but they lacked that. And you cannot lack that, you know, at your home stadium with the fans there wanting and willing you to win. And you know, for the fans, don't be discouraged. TFC will hopefully get it right. They have big games coming up. And yeah, you should never discount your club, your team. You should always remain loyal and you know, unwavering. So hopefully the fans do. And the support will be there just as long as TFC, the players, they understand that they should be held accountable. And that goes from, you know, from the last player on the bench to the starting player up front. So hopefully TFC gets that right.
Yeah, the positives for me in that game was pretty much the foursome of Ryan Johnson, Plata, Luis Silva, and Reggie Lam, who I thought looked a lot better compared to his debut against the Galaxy. Obviously, the drawback was again the back line, and the manner the goals were scored were quite disconcerting, especially the first one. You know, two mistakes there. No one closed down Cronin, who delivered the cross, and you know, Chris Wondolowski was pretty much, you know, unmarked for the header in the box. I just have to ask why. You know, now into season six, TFC still so poor at defending set pieces. You know, we've seen Vancouver look like they've, you know, adjusted and fixed their problems on their back line just over one off season. You know, what's going on with that back line?
Yeah, their back line has always been a concern. It's like they're being haunted from ghosts that have passed on. You know, LMO Johnston and you know, Preki there, but it just seems they lack that leadership at the back. I mean, you cannot have players unmarked at the box. Chris Wondolowski is a proven goal scorer in the MLS. You cannot leave him unmarked. And I have to mention this. You know, Cassell Kelly wrote an interesting article on Julian de Guzman singling him out. I don't think that Julian de Guzman should be placed, all the blame should be placed on him. You know, he can't be everywhere. I know that when he first signed with TFC, there was this big hype around him. Soccer is definitely a different sport than basketball or football when you have a quarterback. I know people look to Torsten Frings now as the quarterback of the team. But there has to be players running off the ball for Torsten Frings to deliver a pass. You know, there has to be players for Julian de Guzman to make that, you know, tackle and then play it off to a player who's free. So, you know, that article that Cassell Kelly wrote was a bit harsh in my opinion. I don't think Julian de Guzman minds with, again, like I said, taking that responsibility. But where's the accountability with the executives who put in place these players? You know, who pay these players their salaries? I think the executives have to take some type of accountability. I know I'm going off you know, off a tangent here, but I just think, you know, articles like that need to be, you know, tailored back a little bit, just because you have to hold other people accountable in that situation. But to go back to your question, Steve, the TFC back line, they need to get Adrian Cant back definitely right away. They need to get Daniil Henry, you know, up to par and up to par with the MLS. The MLS standard, and they need to find a leader, because at the back they need someone to grab the bull by its horns and, and take control. I don't know who the answer is. Maybe they have to find a trade. They have to find some money somewhere to pay an experienced player at the back. Obviously, I don't even think Torsten Frings is the answer. And Torsten Frings is not a center back. I know everybody wants believes that he is, but he is not a center back. And he plays a pivotal role in that you know, that defensive midfield, that the line of defense there in the central part of the field. But they need to do something, because that's the only way they're going to win games and be successful, to stop goals going in.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see if they do bring in a new player, you know, in the summertime or anytime soon through an MLS trade. You know, you can sort of look back on the offseason now and think maybe it wasn't quite as successful as it was originally predicted to be, with, you know, Caicedo not working out and now Acevedo having some problems. You know, the Chicago Fire signed Torsten Frings' former German national teammate, Arne Friedrich, to what I believe is a non-DP contract. And, you know, you have to wonder if TFC couldn't have, you know, had Torsten Frings maybe exerting some pull to have brought him to Toronto. I think he could have been great. The other thing you have to wonder about is, you know, with Kovermans and players like Sulzma, is the Dutch connection there, and thinking that maybe a Dutch center back would be a good player to bring in. You know, Sulzma wasn't a star by any stretch, but he seems to fit the system. And I'm just wondering if, you know, looking at going to Holland and looking at bringing over a Dutch center back who's comfortable on the ball and comfortable in the system might be something that they should be looking at. What do you think?
Yeah, I guess that's down to Aaron Winter and crew. They have to be creative. They have to find a player who can fit their style of play and be that, you know, that pillar in their back line, and you know, be an athletic, you know, specimen really out there, because the players they've brought in aren't doing the job. I think Adrian can, I believe he can do that job. He's suited for that position, and he's a definite leader in the group, in the squad. So I don't know what connections they have. I'm sure they have an abundance of resources that they can, you know, pull from. Let's hope that they do so in the near future, because TFC should not be having a losing season. They should remain competitive in the league. And I mean, they beat the LA Galaxy, which shows they have something there within their squad. They need to, you know, again, pull those resources together and go on the positives and hopefully have success during the season.
From an optics standpoint, is the next match against Columbus, is that a must-win?
I don't think it's a must-win. I believe their Champions League qualifier comes up prior to that Columbus game, right, Steve?
Yeah, it does. That'll be on Wednesday night.
So I don't think the Columbus game is a must-win. I think they have to worry about what game comes first. And they'll struggle, I believe, in the Champions League qualifier game against Santos Laguna. But they have to get their tactics right. They have to dig deep. They have to find a way. Let's hope that the weather isn't on the Mexican side. Let's hope that it's a little bit chilly here in Toronto. And, you know, there's some discomfort for the Mexican side, because TFC, they need every bit of advantage they can find. But I think it starts with them. And you know what? It does start with Julian de Guzman. He's the captain, so he needs to pull the squad together, and with Aaron Winter, and they need to pull together as a team and not separate. Because if they divide now, I'll tell you, it's going to be a long season for them.
Yeah, I mean, we've all been enjoying the weather, but I think all Canadian soccer fans could hope that the weather might drop severely on Wednesday. And it's not you know, unprecedented for TFC to have some success at home against a Mexican team. So it's going to be interesting to see how Wednesday plays out. Unlike you, I always find TFC very hard to predict. They almost always seem to struggle when I think they've got a sure win ahead of them. And then they've also come through with you know, some really big wins over the last couple of years in matches in which I figured they didn't really have much of a chance. So it's going to be interesting to see how that game goes. Certainly Santos Laguna were a handful for the Seattle Sounders, so a big challenge there. Moving on to Montreal. Montreal lost on the road to the Columbus Crew on Saturday. You know, always hard to win in the MLS, probably even harder to win in the MLS on the road. Almost, you know, you could even say it's that much harder to win on the road as an expansion team. So looking at their record so far, they've got the two defeats and one draw in their first three games. But I still get a different feel from this team than maybe the first year additions of TFC in Vancouver. There does seem to be some character, team cohesiveness, and you know, real experience that Montreal has with players like Davy Arnault, Patrice Bernier, Justin Mapp, and Justin Braun, that I just don't think was there for Toronto and to a certain extent Vancouver in their first seasons in the league. With a very challenging schedule to start the season, you know, do you think Montreal will be able to turn what's already some pretty obvious effort on the part of the staff and the players into more consistent points as the season progresses?
Yeah, you mentioned there. I think you mentioned some key players there, and I think we'll always go back to TFC just because we're in Toronto, but I think that's what TFC lacks, that little bit of maturity. They have some key players there in place at TFC, but I think they lack over an overall squad of mature players. I think Montreal has that. There isn't a divide right now. They may lose some games here early on. Results may not, you know, go their way, but the Montreal Impact, Nick DeSantis, Joey Saputo, they're leaders and they're winners, and they don't want to be the laughing stock of the league. So I believe they've put in place that Jesse Marsh is a competitor, and he would want to have those types of players, like you mentioned, Davey Arnault, Patrice Bernier, Justin Mapp. Those are experienced pros, and they've played in big matches, and they'll you know, bring along those younger players who need that, you know, bit of push, you know, that fight, that bite that clubs need, especially an expansion club in the MLS. It's tough going on the road. You're a new team. You're trying to find your way. Results will not go your way all the time. But, no, I think they'll get some points here. On the road, it's difficult. You know, speaking about their tactical and you know their play, their performance, I think that they need to be more creative going forward, especially from the back. I think just launching it forward is not going to do it. I think they need to be more creative. I'm sure Jesse Marsh is going to work on that in the training sessions to come. So, but I think they'll get some points. I think they'll be a little bit more successful than the Whitecaps and Toronto FC were in their first year, their expansion year. So I won't bet the lottery on that, but I will say that I believe so. I believe that they'll be more successful than those two teams were.
I think most people will concede that the main area of improvement is to get a little bit more goal scoring and offense going there. But you know, I have seen things I like. You know, the midfield play of Mapp. The you know, Braun's got something up there as a target man. Arnault and Bernier are solid leaders. I think Ferrari has been much improved since the Vancouver game, and both Felipe and Niasse both have qualities. They bring something to that team. So Chris, you know, what do you like from Montreal so far? You know, in accentuating the positives, what do you think they can build on?
Yeah, you know what I think they could build on is from their first defeat at the hand of the Vancouver Whitecaps. That's I think it starts from there. They know what mistakes they've made. They know what's expected of them going forward into the season. Jesse Marsh will make no excuses. He will go straight to the players, and I'm sure Nick DeSantis above him will go straight to Jesse Marsh and make sure that these players are held accountable. And that's the Joey Saputo way, in my opinion. That's what when I was playing there, everybody was held accountable, and if you were not, if you didn't own up to those mistakes, guess what? You're on the first plane, train, bus out of there. So I just think that they have a lot to build upon. Again, you can always learn from your mistakes. I like what I see from Justin Mapp. I think they need to give him on the ball. They need to continue to play Davey Arnault in the middle of the park and to use Niasse's speed out wide. And I think if they just eliminate those defensive errors, you know, that we saw in the Vancouver game, then I think they'll get some points and have a respectable season. And as a Canadian, I hope that Montreal does well in their expansion year. So wish them all the best.
You know, looking across the pond to Europe, there was some big news recently, you know, with a Canadian bent to it. Former Canadian international Paul Pesce-Salido has been fired as manager of English side Burton Albion. And, you know, it was a great thing having him there, and you know, he was a great international for Canada, and I think it was a great thing for his development as a manager to have been in that position. But with that announcement, many people have now speculated as to what his next move might be, and some people are calling for him to be hired as the next Canadian men's national team head coach. Pesce-Salido did say that he would be interested in that position at some point in his career when he was interviewed by Red Nation back in November 2010. That said, Canada already has a head coach right now in Stephen Hart, so the position isn't open. I'm curious what you make of all the chatter about Pesce-Salido and whether or not you think there's a way that the CSA could utilize a person of Pesce-Salido's experience right now.
Well, you're making my brain tick here. I think Cathal Kelly should write an article on, you know, Canadian soccer executives, because is there a way that the CSA can utilize Paul Pesciolito? 100% yes, they can. He's had a career overseas in England, and he's been a Canadian national, former national team player. And I actually, I criticize the CSA for not, you know, tapping into their own Canadian resources here. I mean, we have players that have played all over Europe, all over the world, and we seem to go away from those types of players with experience. And, you know, to go off on your own, to go and apply a trade, to go and, you know, fight for a career, a job overseas, you have to have some type of thick skin. And Paul Pesciolito, what a pedigree he's had. What a career he's had, you know, coming from Scarborough and then going off to England. And actually his wife, Karen Brady, she was, if I'm not mistaken, one of the, or maybe the first female executive in football over there in the UK. So the Canadian Soccer Association can utilize his experience. I don't know if it's a Canadian coach. I don't know as a coach. Just because we have Stephen Hardy, he's the Canadian national team coach. We have youth team coaches in place. But here's an idea, and I don't know if CSA executives listen to this, but how about hiring Paul Pesciolito as a consultant in some type of capacity to get this right, to finally get the Canadian soccer landscape on the map and to get it, you know, figured out. I think if you assemble a group, I believe they have a group already, but they need to have a separate group to just to figure this thing out, because it is quite frustrating as a fan, as a former professional player from Canada, that we always struggle. We always seem to be behind the eight ball, you know, where our counterparts, the U.S., they're striving ahead. You know, they have a goal in place. They focus on youth development. And I think Paul Pesciolito has figured that out over there in England. He's seen it firsthand. And he would have figured out what to do, or at least have some creative ideas, because I think that's what's lacking at the CSA, some creativity. You know, we need an injection of funds from somewhere. I believe you have, you know, people like Paul Pesciolito. He can generate resources, funds, whatever it is you need. You need someone who's driven, who's had that experience, and I think he's someone that you could start with. So I hope the CSA reaches out to him.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see what he does next. I believe he's lived in the UK for quite some time, and he has a family there. So a consulting role might actually be something that would be, you know, attractive to him, in the sense that, you know, he could telecommute and you not necessarily have to move full time back to Canada if that was, you know, a family impediment there. But and also hoping, you know, with Pesciolito or anyone else who might bring some real expertise and get involved with the Canadian national teams program, is to look at, you know, this win that we've just had on Saturday and Canada qualifying for the U-17 World Cup in you know, quite a many years ago. You know, the team led by Bryce Alderson, Kevin Allman, and Piet, you know, had a major achievement there. And then also, of course, the success of the women's team. And we're all looking forward to hopefully success with the Canadian men's teams this year. That things are on the up, and hopefully more people will want to get involved and sort of use their expertise to take Canada to the next level. So, you know, good things are happening, and hopefully that's going to attract people to the program more than anything else.
Yeah, I think that's fantastic. I think that, like you said, the results that we've been receiving, and with, again, all the resources that we have in Canada, there's no reason that we shouldn't have a reputable, respectable, a winning program. And I would be willing to sit down with any CSA executive, and you know, they probably wouldn't come to me, but I have a few resources of my own, and you know, that's for TSC as well. If you find yourself struggling, I'd be willing to help you out. So I just, you know, I'm a Canadian soccer fan, a former player, and I just want Canada to do so well, and you need people like that who are on the same page. So let's hope they get it right in the near future.
Okay, well, that's it for this week on the North of 49 podcast. We'll be back again next week, and you know, we have a couple of interesting guests lined up for the coming weeks. So be sure to tune in, and we'll see what the week brings. It's going to be interesting. You know, we'll be able to break down what happened next with the men's U-23 Olympic qualifying team, and you know, we'll see how the Canadian teams do in the MLS again as well. So thanks for listening.